Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
And welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. This is our weekly program covering arts and arts events in Valparaiso and throughout Northwest Indiana. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Our theme music you heard is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Underwriters for Art on the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum, regional art patron Mary Levan, and our landlord, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. If you'd like to find out more about leasing space in this historic building, please give Walt a call, 219-462-5821. I'd like to thank them for their generous support. Thanks to Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager, and Tom Maloney, Vice President, Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and is part of the National Endowment for the Arts. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. That's artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. Our program, along with all of our programs, are streaming live at wvlp.org. Art on the Air is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m. Our shows are carried by Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., and you can hear them at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Our entire show archive can be heard at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. And make sure to like us on our Facebook page, Art on the Air, WVLP. Art on the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art on the Air and, of course, the WVLP station, we'd be happy to become part of the WVLP family anytime. Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there or at wvlp.org/support. So don't just be a WVLP and Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you this great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air and the whole WVLP family. Join the WVLP family today. We'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight from the Queen of All Saints Catholic Church and the premier of the Legacy Gallery, Jessica Rozier, who's the Campus Experience Coordinator. Welcome to our show.
Thank you, Larry. Thanks, Esther. I'm really excited to be on here and just talk about the brand new gallery and what we have going on.
Well, tell us a little bit how the gallery started, the idea of it, and everything. We'll talk about the location later, but the concept of it and everything, and then we'll talk about the first exhibit.
Well, the Legacy Center is a newer building to Michigan City. It's attached to our church, Queen of All Saints. We're right in the middle of town. We had this parking lot, and our priest, Father Kevin, had this vision of taking over that parking lot, making a brand new building that could be a gathering space for not only our parishioners, but also the greater community in the Michigan City area. So when you walk into the Legacy Center, some people sometimes jokingly call it like a hotel lobby. It's beautifully decorated. It's got great couches. It's got multimedia. It's just really warm and welcoming. But it really has become the heartbeat of our parish. And when COVID isn't a thing, people hang out in there and just chill and drink coffee, maybe do homework, gather on the weekends or on weeknights. So part of the original vision for that gathering space in the Legacy Center was to have an art gallery. So we have this gallery wall, and the building's about 3 years old now, and the wall just had been sitting empty. It had been a goal to get that gallery started, but you know how it goes when you get busy and it just gets put on the back burner. Well, thanks to COVID and all my extra time, since I wasn't helping plan events, I started to think more about the gallery, and it was born and it's happening. So we're really excited that we finally have artwork on those walls and that this is something we're going to be continuing in the future.
So are you going to feature not only local artists, but student artists from Queen of All Saints? Are they going to have a presence there?
You know, we haven't really talked too much about what we're doing next. We're just excited to get it off the ground. It is a great idea to feature our own students, and I can see that happening in the future for sure. What we've been aiming for right now is connecting with the local Michigan City arts community. So shout out to Christina Noski at SFC Gallery, downtown Michigan City, because she helped with all the framework for this. She helped with designing the call out for artists and how we were going to do it and where we were going to hang things and the equipment we needed. So she helped us kind of think about how we could bridge the church to the community. But I can definitely see us working with the kids in the future too.
Because the school is so welcoming to the arts. I mean, the school has a very focused path to the arts. I know the principal is very, very much involved with what goes on in the school. And
you know, tell us about the current exhibit that this is your premier exhibit that's in there, and tell us about who's doing it and what kind of art she has.
Sure. Well, Pat Herman is our first artist, and she is a local to Michigan City. She actually lives in Duneland Beach, that beautiful area right on the lake. And her pieces just look so gorgeous in the building. As I mentioned, the Legacy Center is just really warm and welcoming. It's got a lot of nature tones in it anyway. And Pat's work just complements that so beautifully. She does a lot of plein air. So a lot of what she has are images of the dunes themselves, things of Shelburg Farm in the national park, things of people out at the farmer's market. It's such a great match for what we have going on in the Legacy Center.
Yeah, she's a very talented artist. Yeah.
And when can people come see that, just by walking in, or do they have to do it with the COVID-19 with an appointment? Or how does that work for people to come in and like, what's your hours? Or
we are open 7 days a week. You can come in anytime the building is open, and we actually open at 6 a.m. So if you're an early bird and want to get your art in right away, you can come at 6 a.m. and then we're open till 8 p.m. every night, and that's 7 days a week. So as far as COVID goes, you know, we do ask that you wear a mask and obviously stay home if you're sick. But otherwise, please come and see Pat's art.
Is there a way to view it virtually as well if somebody does not want to come into the building?
Yeah, we are featuring one painting a week on our Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/QAS Michigan City. So we're doing, like I said, one painting a week that we're putting out there kind of as a teaser.
Well, we'd like to thank you for being on Art in the Air for our spotlight segment for the Queen of All Saints Catholic Church and the new Legacy Center with a brand new gallery. So we'd like to thank you for being on our show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Our next Art in the Air segment was suggested by Bridget Nadolsky, who is the co-owner of Artsy Fine Arts and Antiques in Chesterton, but also a recently retired art teacher. She suggested that maybe it would be great for Art in the Air to explore the challenges facing art teachers at the end of their school year last year as the pandemic came upon us, and the challenges they're facing in this upcoming school year, either by doing distance learning or teaching in the classroom. Let's take a listen into what these three art teachers had to share with Art on the Air. And on Art in the Air, we're going to continue with our segment here on teachers, art teachers in schools. We have Jim Graff, of art teacher at Griffith High School, and he also teaches ceramics. Welcome to Art in the Air.
Thank you, Larry. Nice to be here.
Hello.
Well, what we want to first talk about is obviously with the pandemic, how it's influenced your way of teaching. First of all, at the end of the school year, all of a sudden you're in March and you went to a shutdown. Tell us how that impacted your teaching back then.
It was a little bit of a challenge, I'll say that. Not only do I teach ceramics, but I teach sculpture or 3D art. I taught an advanced drawing class that same semester and one section of photography. And we had probably about an hour's notice. We got an email around 1:45, 2 o'clock, I think on that Friday, that said that we're going to start going virtual next week. So I had to kind of quickly scramble and figure out what actually I was going to do.
Okay, well then, how did you make the transition from teaching in a classroom to virtual, especially with the kind of teaching you have to do with photography, I could see, but sculpture and ceramics, that's got to be tough.
The sculpture and ceramics was a bit of a challenge. I videotaped myself in my own studio doing different, you know, techniques and uploaded that for the kids to view.
So what grade do you teach?
I teach high school, freshmen through seniors. Most of the freshmen are in our intro level classes, and 3D art is an intro level class.
So while you were teaching virtually, do you feel that most of the students had, or did you do your lesson plan about what materials they have there? Because you can do so much sculpture just with common things that you have around the house.
Yeah, correct. For sculpture, I did a found object color wheel where they gathered different objects around the house and created a color wheel. And I talked about color theory and, how color works. And then, we did a lot of origami because I know everybody has paper.
That's true. And the students actually love origami. I always teach that to my students. It's like
they
from
do.
Kindergarten, I teach it actually.
They do.
Because it teaches so much more. It teaches so much.
It does. And I do think the kids really enjoyed it. So we did quite a bit of origami. But usually I use a lot of clay. I'm sorry?
Oh, yeah, no. So did they get... So how did you incorporate clay?
I pretty much had to stop all of clay.
Yeah, I thought you did clay, but...
With ceramics, we do a lot of ceramic vocab. So I would show them different things in my studio and upload videos of different techniques, hoping that, you know, we can incorporate this stuff when we return. Of course, we never did return. So that's what I had to do in ceramics. They were mostly informational videos for the kids to watch. And there's different software programs where I can actually see if the kids watch the video or not. Oh. So if they watch the video, then they got credit or got points for watching it. And I can incorporate questions at the end of that also.
You know, I'm also like working on lesson plans for my students. And I was thinking like, because they love, I mean, it doesn't matter the age, they love clay, just love it. So I was thinking, and it really depends on what they have at home, because we'll be teaching virtually as well to begin with. And I was thinking of like Reggio is clay almost, like maybe they can, that might give them the same tactile feel. So I know.
Right now, they're proposing that we might go virtual for the first 4 weeks. And I'm hoping if that happens, maybe I can get a little kit together and have some kids take home some clay. Right now, I really don't know what I'm going to be teaching next semester. So I still need to figure out who's in what class and so forth.
So, Jim, tell us a little bit how the pandemic's affected you more personally. I mean, you've been probably sheltering in place and it's changed your plans. And also, how this summer you're planning for, you know, what you were going to do and you didn't really know how to plan for that.
I haven't really known how to plan. It helps when you know what you're going to be teaching, but it's just been a chaotic year for the school systems, and I totally understand it. Normally I would work in my own studio for, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. I share a space with another artist. So because of the COVID, We alternate days. I'll work like Monday and Tuesday, and he'll work the rest of the week, just so we stay distanced, because we don't want to hurt each other. So it's cut down a little bit on my studio time. A lot of the shows that I usually do have been canceled. So right now I'm just building up ceramic stock.
Oh, so is that your personal medium? Yes.
I'm a potter.
So do you do sculptural or functional or both?
It's a functional pottery. A lot of mugs, bowls, vases, flower pots, things like that.
Do you ever exhibit of your pieces, Jim?
I do have some of my mugs that I throw at the Art Z Gallery in Chesterton, and they've been doing fairly well over there.
And we know Artsy quite well, because Bridget is the one who connected you to us, even though she's retiring from teaching. So very good. Yeah. Just on another subject, and I know you're involved because one of my former students is the theater director from Griffith, and some of the things you guys are facing, and you're the technical director for her, which she speaks very highly of you, Jenna Candiano. But anyway, tell us about some of the challenges you see facing theater coming in this year.
Well, there's a big challenge with the whole social distancing thing. We're scrambling, trying to figure out how we're going to run a fall play. We're thinking about doing some sort of like radio program, like Orson Welles' War of the Worlds. If it came down to it, we might be able to live stream it or Zoom it where parents could log in and see it. But we want to be able to give our kids some sort of experience, because our big musical production last spring was supposed to be Shrek, and that was canceled because of the pandemic. So the kids want to get back. We want to work with the kids. So we're trying to find something that would work out for everything and stay within the guidelines of the state and the school and so forth.
What's your plans after the pandemic is done?
After the pandemic, probably go on a good vacation. That would be really nice. My wife and I were supposed to go to Aruba actually this week, but we had to cancel because of the whole pandemic.
That's too bad. Well, any final thoughts before we wrap up here?
I have mixed emotions about going back. Yes, I miss my kids. I love being in the classroom. There's nothing more than I love about that. But the safety factor, I have my 83-year-old mother-in-law that lives with us. I would hate to bring something home to her. So I really have mixed feelings about this. You know, I really love the hands-on aspect of working with the kids and interacting with the kids. And hopefully someday we can get back to that.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for being Art in There. That's Jim Graff from Griffith High School, art teacher, ceramics and everything. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
And our next art teacher for our special segment here is Brooke Sutter. She's from Duneland School System, and we're going to discuss all the issues you have. Brooke, welcome to Art on the Air.
Hi, thank you. I'm actually from Liberty Intermediate, just to clarify.
Ah, intermediate school. Very good.
Yes.
Let's first of all talk about the end of last school year. All of a sudden, you're teaching classes, and then you're shutting down. So how did you have to quickly adapt right then to accommodate that?
Well, we have Canvas. And we've been using it for quite some time. So it wasn't terrible. I think the biggest adjustment was trying to make sure that we could maintain some of the student contact other than with Canvas, or communicating through Canvas and email. So just figuring it all out between me and the kids and other teachers. But it was all right. I felt like we were pretty prepared, because we have e-learning days within our school system. But it was an adjustment for sure, being in everyone's living room.
What kind of projects did you have to, you had to change kind of the way you were teaching. So what kind of projects did you do for that period toward the end of the school year?
Well, I kind of looped a little bit and did some review with the kids just to make sure that they could utilize some of the tools that we have through Canvas and through their iPads. So they have some tools like Sketches School and things like Keynote that I just want to make sure that they could utilize. And most of them, you know, they're quicker at it than we are sometimes. So most of them were pretty quick at it. And then I found myself trying to tie my lessons to some local artists and artists like artwork from Indiana, and tried to coordinate it with, you know, art in our community, because I think the kids weren't really feeling that sense of community. So I tried to encompass that within my lessons.
And so which, what type of art were you focusing on? So were you, was it painting? Was it sculpture?
So we did some pop art with some lettering, and we did Robert Indiana with the love sculpture and a little art history there. And then I had them come up with a positive word that was encouraging at this time. So then we carried it on through. And by the end of my unit, we had studied the South Shore posters and different artists around here, such as Holly Jackson, who has painted the dunes, and people that have painted the dunes, and looked at that. And then they created their own South Shore poster style poster of a place that they love in Indiana.
So which, what part did they enjoy the most, do you feel? Like, did they gravitate as a class toward one artist or one sort of style?
You know, I think the poster was the most successful at the very end when it kind of all culminated together. And they actually shockingly surprised me. I did a little nature study with Da Vinci history, and they seemed to do really well with just the good old pencil paper sketch and just really enjoyed it. I had some students comment that they were really excited because they did better than they thought they had. And by the end, the kids were starting to learn how to use their tools and communicate with me. So on the sidebar, they would write me little notes. I'm so proud of myself. And
aww.
So it was really kind of neat as they started to learn the tools and I started to learn the tools, and kind of it all came together. We started communicating more.
So do you have your opening lesson plans for when school starts again? I mean, what do you think you're going to start with?
We have started. Me and the other intermediate school teacher, Aubrey, she has, we've started, it's going to be Walk Into Another World Through Art is our theme. And we're going to start with some shoes and some shoe designs that illustrate who they are to kind of get to know our new students. So
I love that so much. What a great idea.
So how has your summer been, Brooke? You know, for you personally, it's like pretty much hibernating in place for the most part. And have you been able to do any art yourself, you know, outside of, you know, getting prepped for classes?
No. Prepped for classes probably the most of the time in my free time. And you know, there's this Bitemoji classroom that a lot of teachers are doing. So you kind of get down the rabbit hole once you start, and it's that creative process. And I've made my classroom look like my classroom in the building. And it's just, you know, you hop down that rabbit hole and you just can't get out.
I did see
so
that.
Brooke, what is your personal art medium?
I grew up, and my strength is probably watercolors. However, I think that's the greatest thing about teaching at an intermediate, middle school, you know, younger grade level, K through eight, is I get to teach all of it. And I really have grown to love so many different mediums through teaching and really embrace them through teaching. I did not like ceramic as a college student, and I did not think I would do well teaching it. And I have gained great strength through teaching my students. And my students have helped me. You know, they always come up with great suggestions too. So I've really grown to love all of it and tried to master, or, you know, quite a few things, tried getting there.
You're involved in the arts community. I serve with you on the board for Chester and Arts Center, though we haven't met except by Zoom meetings and everything. Have you been exhibited anything of your work in the area?
No.
Do you want?
I have two kids that keep me busy.
Do you want to exhibit your work at some point? There's a lot of opportunities around the area after we get out this.
I'm hopeful. You know, through this process, I have learned that I do need to create a space for me and my own children, that is a creative space.
Very good.
To do so.
Well, give us some final thoughts about your, you've talked a little about your prep for next year and also about what's your plans after the pandemic has passed.
Oh, goodness. My plans are to, you know, continue, you know, some of the technology and integration that I've done through the classroom and continue to use it to, you know, my advantage and the students' advantage to keep those connections. And I would like to, like I said, get that creative space for me and my children so that I can do more artwork, encourage them to do their own artwork a little bit more than what we are. Find ourselves very busy with schoolwork.
That's true. That keeps you busy. We appreciate you being on Art on the Air. That's Brooke Sutter from the Duneland School System Intermediate School. Thank you for coming on and sharing your issues with being an art teacher.
Thank you.
We continue our Art in the Air segment on art teachers and dealing with the pandemic with Jessica Corral. She's an elementary art teacher in the Valparaiso school system. And welcome to the Art in the Air.
Thank you for having me. Hello.
So first of all, what we'd like to ask you about is last year kind of snuck up on all the art teachers as well as everyone else. And all of a sudden you were in the classroom and out of the classroom. So how did you deal with that? What did you have to transform? And art is a particularly difficult thing. You can't just assign problems from a math book. So how did you deal with that issue?
Ooh, yeah, so it caught us off guard. And as an art teacher, I am very kinesthetic with different materials. And so when you're in the course of your year, you have things planned out and you realize that all the plans you had now have to be reconstructed. And not every student has what you would be providing them in class. So you have to be really creative about what you're teaching or how you're continuing your curriculum with what's on hand at home. So yeah, definitely thrown a curveball at the end of the year with no baseball in session. I'm a Cubs fan.
What type of things did you use, like a Zoom or email, or what kind of do you support the students at home?
So in Valpo, we're blessed with a district where we've been kind of using the framework of Canvas. And so we've really just become accustomed to using that as a digital platform. My background is really in web design, and I'm very technologically savvy compared to some teachers. So I wasn't in this frenzy of how do I do it? It was more or less, how do I simplify and how do I teach with what students will have on hand at home? So for me, it was just using the platform that I was familiar with and providing resources, even if it was in the scope of videos from another source. If it was, for instance, we did a color unit and we just had them collect items from around the house to make a color wheel. And so using all of these different items allowed them to construct a color wheel with things in their environment. So it was a playful way to observe and kind of like scavenger hunt for pieces that would fit. So it was just a different approach. We're learning about color, but within the confines of our home. So
what kind of projects, because we're remote teaching to begin with, what kind of projects are you going to start out with when you start teaching again?
So yeah, keeping the diversity is really what's tricky for me. So this year is a little bit different in that we already know going into it that we are starting with some students being remote for Valpo and some students being in the class. So as a teacher, I'm going to have to balance out both areas, right? But I also know that I need to communicate to students what they need ahead of time. So since this is the beginning of the year and students are going to have to purchase items anyway for school, at least now I can say, hey, you need watercolor or you need this for at home. So it allows me to at least have basic supplies that I can know that the students will have accessible during the time of the lessons that I teach. So a little bit different, you know, environment versus being thrown into something that you didn't expect. Whereas now at least we know, okay, what can we work with? What do the students need? And it allows a little bit more for preparation, which is important to teachers.
Yes, completely. Yeah. Are there going to be kind of care packages that they could pick up? Like if they have watercolor, are they going to be able to pick up special paper, or how are there going to be art care packages, like, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, no, we don't have anything of that nature. We just have a list of what they would need. And it's really, at first, it's going to be basic. It'll be markers, crayons, pencil, paper. Yeah. I always require a sketchbook from first grade up through fifth grade because I work centrally on vocabulary as a basis to the, you know, to the growth of each process and skills that we're building. So there's not specific care packages that are made up per se, but at least we'll be on the same page of what everybody has access to, because in March and in April, it was like, do they have crayons at home? Do they have markers at home? Right? So I couldn't even use that as a common item that was expected. So even those basic items will be expected to be had, you know, for this round, which is better. Yeah, yeah, more, yeah, different.
Jessica, level. Are you a traveling teacher? You travel from school to school?
For the last, what year is this for me? 10 years at Flint Lake. And the last 2 years, I picked up a grade level at Cook's just to make up for sections that during the redistricting, we lost some students. So as art teachers in my district, you kind of have to balance it out and have, you know, the appropriate, yeah. So anyway, not to get too caught up in the details of that, I don't travel this year. They determined that I'll be at Flint, so that's a plus.
Very good. Well, you appreciate you sharing your moments here on the teaching of art and the challenges in the pandemic. Jessica Harrell from the Valparaiso School System, thank you so much for being on Art on the Air.
Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
And now I'd like to welcome to Art in the Air, Jesse Johnson. He uses elements of colorful forms and abstract structures in his work that deeply engages the viewer. Visual elements of color tell an ongoing story in his whole body of work. Jesse, welcome to Art on the Air.
How you doing? I'm glad to be here.
Aloha, Jesse. I'm so glad you're here.
Well, Jesse, we'd like you to tell our audience a little bit about yourself. So tell us about your journey, about where you got from to where you are now.
You know, it's funny that you said that because I'm a first-time author. I have 3 books published myself, and I actually tell that story in the book. And so it actually started when I was about 7 years old, and I got a butt whooping from my stepfather that I couldn't stand, and that's how I really got into art. I'm self-taught. There are stories that I can share, but it'll take up too much time. But to give you just a little synopsis of who I am, as a child, I've been through abuse. I've seen abuse. I've seen the falling structure of our country. I've seen black men get shot at physically outside while I'm standing there and the cops shooting and he see all these children outside. I've grown into a mature person that developed by just my lifestyles, living on the west side of Chicago, the south side of Chicago, and all around. And my father was named after him, left me in the house at actually the age of 5 by myself. And my mother came to get me for 2 weeks. And all I knew how to do was pour cereal and make a jelly sandwich at that time. And so these things that happen in my life, I wind up learning how to create things from issues that we had. And so in perspective, I've lived almost everywhere. Chicago, the suburbs, Madison, Park Forest. And now I stay in Indiana. Some of the schools I went to were Frederick Douglass and Duke Ellington, from Mohawk to Black Hawk to Forest Trail to college, from Prairie State College to Indiana University, and now I'm working on my master's at Valparaiso University. I'm a self-taught artist, but when I started going to Indiana University Northwest, that's where I got more characterized about my art. And one of my professors there was also the chair at Ivy Tech, which hired me to teach art myself for Ivy Tech. Community College was amazing. It was really amazing. I was able to teach art appreciation, which also drove me to write the first book, Blackout, the African-American Appreciation of Art.
Yeah, one follow-up on that. You're also a minister. So tell us just briefly about that before we continue on with your art.
You know, it's funny because I never thought I'd become a minister. But what happened was I was sitting home in Chicago Heights in Beacon Hill, and it was a ton of people out in the street. I'm going to tell you, at least I'm going to say about 175 people, from the people I ran in gangs with to just friends, and they were shooting dice and doing some illegal stuff. Cars was driving in your grass just to get around the street because people were blocking the street. And I happened to come out there threatening people to get out my driveway with all that mess, because you ain't finna have no cops running up in my house. And I went out there with something in my hand, came back, went back in the house, and all of a sudden, the Spirit of God spoke to me. I know this is going to sound crazy, but I can't tell it all because I get emotional with this story. But God told me to pick up the Bible. I didn't know what the heck a Bible was. And literally, he told me to go outside and talk to those people. And I kept questioning them. I was like, I'm not doing that. You know what I'm saying? But I picked up the Bible and I walked outside. And the first thing that came out my mouth, and I don't know that if this was a reflection from Jehovah's Witnesses and other people knocking on my door growing up, but I said, do you know Jesus Christ is your Lord and Savior? And right there, my mind said, they about to whoop me up. And so next thing you know, one of them said, you know what? You know, first they came at me kind of wrong. And that made me come back to who I was. And I said, hey, I don't know who you think you're talking to. But then this guy named Buck Bell said, Jesse, I know what you're talking about. My family is a Jehovah's Witness, so I know. And then next thing you know, Steve Bradley and all the other guys start saying, yeah, you know, we've been through this. And then I realized that was the devil's playground. He was trying to stop me from doing what God has called me to do. So I walked down to the end of the block of the street to a lady that we know as Sister. Sister was the one that found my father when I became 21, so I can go back and, you know, see who my father was. Wound up finding all my other brothers and sisters. But anyway, I went down there and her daughter had took over the house. Sister moved back to Mississippi where my father was. And the Spirit of God told me to go in. And so I'm trying to win souls, save souls. And so I questioned May Baby, Ella, her name, and said, do you know Jesus Christ is your Lord and Savior? And after I did that, she said, you know, I don't really want to talk about it, but if you want to try to bring somebody to Christ, let me call my daughters in there. So eventually she called her daughters in there and I did a demonstration of hell, what I thought hell was. So I took a cigarette lighter, lit it, and put my hand above the cigarette lighter. As I did that, it got really hot. So I asked them to put their hand over the cigarette lighter. And they was like, ooh, that's starting to get too hot. And I said, imagine that being 10 million times worse than that. That's how I reflect hell was. And then I said, do you know Jesus Christ? I hear, they said, I heard people talk about him. One thing led to another. I told them if they wanted to be saved, they had to repeat these words. And they did. Lo and behold, the very mom who said she didn't want to was repeating the words herself. So that day, 13 souls actually gave their life up to Christ. From that journey, I knew I had to tell somebody. So I went to this church called Valley Kingdom, and that was in South Harlem. And the bishop, H. Daniel Wilson, was the bishop over there. And I wind up writing a sermon that night based off of love and agape. And I didn't know what it was, so I took it to him. And, you know, bishop is very important, and so everybody stood in this long line to get into the church. And when Bishop came around to shake everybody's hand, I tried to pull out the paperwork and show him what I had. And his henchman, I like to say henchman, elbowed me and pushed me up against the wall. I almost forgot what God called me to do because I grabbed this guy's arm and twisted it back behind his back and see if he liked being slammed up against the wall. And Bishop calmed us down, took me to the office, and I gave him the sermon. And he said, this is for you. This is what God had for you, you know. And so eventually I left that church and didn't want to go back to that church and wound up being with my brother-in-law, Reverend Otis Lane. And from there, I told him about my story. And that's how I got into to becoming an elder and a pastor. the story is actually longer than that because I probably missed a whole lot of points. But, you know, I just want to get you there because after the 13 souls gave themselves to Christ, a lady asked me to pray for her. I didn't know how to pray. So I was sitting at home talking to myself, arguing to God about why did she ask me to do this? I don't know how to pray. Didn't realize I was actually praying. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, that story gets me emotional. So I also wanted to cut stuff out because I'll start tearing up.
I know. So that is a very emotional story. So what kind of art came out of that experience for you? I mean, were you doing art during that whole time that...
Yes, I was doing different types of art. Like at Rich Central High School, I did a lot of different types of pieces, though. Some religion, some not. I did Michael Jackson when he was in a white suit on the album cover and he had a tiger up against him. I drew him exactly how it was because I was told, draw what you see. Then I painted. And then Mr. Davis, the art teacher at the time, came along. He was like, can I see your brush for a minute? And he took my brush and he mixed a lot of dark paint and totally changed the look of my paint. Now Michael Jackson was this pitch black, you know, artist, you know, and I got upset. I got so upset to the point where I wanted Miss Bernardi Zajac, which was the other art teacher, and I no longer wanted Mr. Davis as an art teacher. He's a really good guy, though. Let me get that out. But I was offended. Yes,
but your artwork shouldn't have been manipulated, right?
Right. And I was offended, and I reported him to the dean and to the principal. Because they bid it on that picture, and I got it up to $500. And, you know, back in those days, I was like, "Woo, I'm about to get this money," you know. And anyway, one thing led to another. Mr. Davis said the reason why my painting was so light was because they used light to reflect light to make Michael Jackson look so light-skinned. But I said, you said paint what you see, so therefore that's light that I painted. That I saw. What happened? Can y'all still hear me?
Oh yeah, you're fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my screen went off. And then that's basically what happened. But I've done drawing sketches and things about political issues, women's rights, and other things growing up, and I kind of stuck with that because I want the world to see what I see through my eyes.
So where do you start with a new piece of work, like a painting? Do you have one of these subjects in mind, like you want to get a political message across and you start a painting, or do you get to the canvas and then it comes to you what you're going to do?
You know, it's funny how my artwork and creativity comes to me because I see issues in the world and I've lived a lot of issues about racism, been spat on, I've been almost stuffed in a locker. I've been beaten by white people and a German person. And matter of fact, at Rich Central. but I also was able to create just by when somebody might tell me something that happened. I might have not been there, but the way they told the story.
But you feel it.
Right, you feel it. And so I learned that art has this aesthetic that provoke issues and emotions that we learn, and this is what you learn in art appreciation. And I was so happy to learn it in college. I learned it kind of late, but it's better late than never. You know what I mean? So I've learned that the stuff that I've been creating was off of just aesthetics of things that I've seen or lived, and that's how I create my art. Now I also create from beauty of things that I've live.
Right. And yeah, actually you have quite a few different styles, and one style seems very, to me, very reminiscent of Kerry James Marshall's work. Are you inspired by him? Because I look at your paintings and I think of his work as well.
I'm glad you say that because I talk about that in the book. David Klayman is one of the most famous people that I know. That teaches and runs the art department at Indiana University Northwest. And just by David Klayman and Jennifer Greenberg and Derek from Ceramics and John and just you name them, they all kind of teach you certain things. yeah, your ideas are your ideas, but they help bring it into fruition. I never knew who Kerry James Marshall was. And so I got offended when David Klayman first told me, your work remind me of Kerry James Marshall.
Oh, it's a big compliment.
Right. I didn't know that, though. and this is why it's so important to get educated about these things. And so when my professor asked me to teach over at Ivy Tech, I decided to revamp how we would teach art appreciation.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
And the funny thing about that is Lynette Gonzalez was my professor, and I love her. She come to all my exhibitions and support me. She the one convinced me into writing a book. And the first book is about Black artists, because most art appreciation books don't really show any representation of Black art. They might talk about it for like a half a paragraph and move on. Well, this book have a lot of diversified Black artists in it, and nothing but Black artists. And I want to talk about artists of today, because we always buying and talking about artists of yesterday that are dead and gone.
Right.
What about us? That's a lot. And so I'm just so happen to be writing a fourth book, but this will include everybody's art, Black, white, Latinos, everyone. But learning this, I was able to take my students to downtown at the
Museum of Contemporary Art.
And guess what? When I went there, I had the opportunity, and I was so blessed, to see Kerry James Marshall and all his work. I got so emotional.
I
saw the work, I visualized it, read it, looked him up, and started studying him, and didn't realize I do remind people of him and the guy that, I forgot his name, that used to do the work of from Good Times, that painting that they would show from the TV show Good Times. But then David Klayman would always say, also compliment me and tell me my work also reminded him of Carol Walker, Betty Saar, who did Aunt Jemima's Revenge. And then I started
looking. It's actually really beautiful work that she does. She's one of my favorites.
Yeah, and it amazes me. And then so I stuck with it. But now I do other type of series and other type of works of abstract, because Jackson Pollock was one of my favorite artists. So I used to do my Jackson Pollock abstract type styles. And
there's the one painting, and I don't know if it's the actual name of it. And I was kind of wondering where you were going with the title, because the work is so gorgeous. It's This Is My Finger to the Art World. But the painting is just like magnificent. I didn't know whether that was just something you had. I don't know if that's the actual title of the painting, but that's what you.
Can you describe it? Because I know I have a lot.
It's an abstract. It's mostly yellow. It's really gigantic painting.
Yeah, because most of my work, I'll say this is my finger to the art world. Because if you remember, art really had a big hierarchy in it, especially with European art. And it was hard for women to make it. It is definitely hard for African Americans to make it. And so sometimes I go off of those issues.
Yeah, I was just wondering, because the painting is an abstract. Jesse, I really like that still life you did with the guitar and the gong. Was that during school or was that in your own studio?
That was actually at the studio at Arts on Grant when they tore down Tamarack at Indiana University. We had to have a facility to do our artwork. And so they rented out the village over there in Gary, and they used the that old family video place as our theater. So they redid that, they revamped it, and then they revamped and built walls and made studios for us and titled it Arts on Grant. And so that was at my studio at school, and I would often take still life pieces, and normally I call the series Life Is Not Still. So I have a lot of series of still life paintings that goes into the series Life Is Not Still. And I love the gong, and I love certain bottles and the way the light hit it. and the way you reflect the painting by putting the objects in a way where it just doesn't look flat, where you can build on shadows and other elements to continue to work to look abstract but realistic.
Yeah, I really, really like that painting.
Jesse, tell us a little bit about the Best Gallery. I know you had a little spot there on near 53rd and Broadway, but I think you're doing it more virtual now. But tell us about what you're doing with the Best Art Exposure, and then I guess you might have a future merging with the Fox Gallery.
Yes, so Best Art Exposure, and first let me talk about Best Art Exposure. So Best Art Exposure, you can look up a lot of the stuff on Google by going to NorthwestIndianaTimes.com and type in Best Art Exposure, and you'll see all the wonderful things that we did with artists and all the events that we had when we allowed artists to sort of vent, to use it as a platform.
I love the music. I love the music that's on there. So did that happen in the gallery?
Yeah, oftentimes I will play different elements of music from classical to jazz. And then depending on the type of event would generate the type of music we would play for the event, because a lot of the people not only wanted to talk, they wanted to be inspired. And sometimes music can inspire you. As a matter of fact, when I paint, sometimes I listen to music, and depending on the type of music that I play would create the certain type of painting. But Best Art Exposure, I wanted to use as a platform for artists to be able to speak, those that are hidden in a basement or kind of frightened to come out, those that don't believe their work is worth it. And I tell them, yes, it is. We are all worth it. You are worth it. You matter. Your work matters. What you have to say matters. We can't evoke a conversation if you don't speak. It'll be a monologue. And so Best Art Exposure, we had all types of events. We had spoken words, because I'm also a poet. We had elements of, like, if you want to do a book signing, we had book signings there. I just wanted to give the community, and whether you lived in our community or you lived in another state or another country, the opportunity to bring your work here without all the bells and whistles that a lot of galleries do. And we didn't even charge 50 or 60% like most galleries. We only charge like 25 to 35%, because as an artist, I don't believe you should take half of what I've worked so hard for. And so that's how I related the art gallery. Now, Georgia Fox was an artist and a gallery owner in Lake Station that believed in me and my work and loved my work. And so she would often put my work in her gallery. Well, for years, me and George have been talking and seeing each other, and she would say, and I would say, we ought to come together, you know. And it just so happened we came together. I came up with the idea of the Best of Fox Gallery, Best being my gallery, Fox being her gallery. We still have our entity gallery, Fox Gallery, and Best Art Exposure. But now I want to find a building if I can raise the capital from our GoFundMe account to actually purchase a building, and hopefully with apartments at the top so we can rent those out as artist spaces and put a cafe in it and create three galleries into that one space. I applied for the nonprofit status. This way, if we can purchase the building, we'll never have to pay taxes on the building anymore. And now we just got to keep raising capital for to pay the electric, the water, and the gas, and having our events. And that's where the cafe would come in, or people donating stuff to sell so we can continue to survive as a gallery. A lot of other things that I did was through Best Art Exposure was because I was a teacher for Ivy Tech Community College. Ivy Tech allowed me to use the college to exhibit work. So if you join the group that we had on Facebook, Black Entertainment and Success Stories, and the AND is the AND symbol, not A-N-D, you could put your work wherever I go. So I had work at South Shore Arts at Substation 9. I've had work, not just my work, but the people that joined the group. Work at Ivy Tech. I've had it at IUN. I've had it at you name it. I've been offered to put my work in museums. Just before COVID happened, we was in Texas, in Plano, Texas, and I went to a place called Sky Pony Gallery. Amazing gallery. I took some work down there to Texas, so I'll be able to exploit our gallery down in Texas. You know, you have to get some visual aspect in other places other than just Indiana. And he was amazed by my work, and he said he wanted to make space, him and his wife, to get my work there. And then I got a call from Dallas African American Museum, which wanted three of the pieces that I sent to them. And so Best Art Exposure, they gave me the opportunity to curate other shows and exhibitions in other places. And that's what we're trying to do with Best and Fox.
Very good. Well, Ed, we have just a second here. So can you tell us your web addresses and the GoFundMe address real quickly there, Jesse?
The GoFundMe address is kind of hard to say because it's got all that.
I have it here. It's GoFundMe.com/keeping-the-art-alive. So that's the GoFundMe address. And how do they find your gallery?
They can go to bessartexposure.com. That's B-E-S-S, not B-E-S-T, B-E-S-S, artexposure.com. I have a new website coming out called bestfox.org, bestfox.org. One of my professors from me working on my master's actually is building my site for us, for me in Georgia.
Okay, that's very great. Good. Well, thank you for being on Art in the Air. That's Jesse Johnson from Best Exposure and Gallery. We appreciate you being on the show.
I appreciate you guys having me.
Oh, thank you so much, Jesse.
And we'd like to thank our guests today for being on Art in the Air, which is heard every Friday at 11 a.m., rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m., and Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Your hosts are Larry Breckner and Esther Golden. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager, and Tom Maloney, Vice President, Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Underwriters for Art in the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum and Walt Breininger of Paragon Investments. Also, Mary Levan is our art patron supporter. Art in the Air is supported by the Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts-related event, exhibit, please email us at artontheair@gmail.com. That's artontheair@gmail.com. See you right here next week, 103.1 FM and 89.1 FM, Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know. Esther and Larry, Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.